Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. I've got two great guests to introduce you to this afternoon, and indeed we will cover the gambit moving from technology to poetry. In the first half hour of the program, we'll enjoy a live on-the-air telephone interview with Eric Ginsburg. He is the marketing vice president for BookSwim, which is the Netflix of books. As you know, right now you can purchase books, you can check them out of the library, but is this convenient enough for you? What if you wanted easier access via mail to a great number of books that you'd like to read? Well, Eric Ginsburg is going to tell us about BookSwim and let us know how we can go about checking out books via mail. He's also going to talk to us about ebooks, and furthermore, he will defend Woodpulp production of the written word in 2010. And then, in the second half of the program, we'll be joined by State of Maine poet Anne Brinning Olson. She's a writer and teacher who lives in the mountains of central Maine, and her work, her poetry, has appeared in literary magazines in 48 states. I wonder if she's often on the phone and on email harassing literary editors in those last two states to see if and when they'll be publishing her work. Certainly they should, in my opinion, that only of the host of this show, for her work has been well peer-reviewed and widely accepted. She's the author of two books. The first chapbook is The Church of Saint Materiana. That was published by Moon Pie Press in 2007. And her second book, The Beauty of It, is forthcoming from Sheltering Pine Press. That comes out next month. So, ladies and gentlemen, on today's show, Eric Ginsburg of BookSwim in the first half hour, Anne Brinning Olson in the second half hour. Technology and poetry, and a lot of creativity, interesting talk, and jazz bumper music thrown in. These are the things that you've come to expect when you tune in on a Wednesday afternoon at 5 to everybody's favorite poetry and technology radio show. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back with Eric Ginsburg. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Thanks very much for tuning into your local community radio station, heard throughout the Sacramento Valley and everywhere else via the World Wide Web. My name is Andy Jones, and I'm very pleased to introduce you all to Eric Ginsberg. In 2003, Eric Ginsberg, an avid musician and songwriter, founded a music education-focused nonprofit in his native New Jersey. Not knowing how else to spread the word, he started calling local newspapers, magazines, and radio stations, unwittingly beginning a media relations and marketing career. Though a math education major, working full-time as a teacher, Ginsberg took the advice of a local editor-in-chief and pursued a PR job at the largest independent library system in the state. The time he spent there gave Eric great insights into the habits and activities of readers and into the nonprofit book lending world. Thus, his work as the vice president of marketing at BookSwim, the Netflix for books. It's a position to which he brought his library experience, helping shape BookSwim into the well-rounded company that it has become. Eric Ginsberg is the voice of BookSwim, responsible for online copy as well as presenting BookSwim's unique message to the media and at conferences around the country. I'm sure that he would love it if you visited the website of BookSwim. We'll say more about that in a few minutes. But first, Eric Ginsberg, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hello, Dr. Andy. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you here. So I gave a little bit of a hint there, but tell folks at home, what exactly is BookSwim?
Well, BookSwim.com is a lot like Netflix, but for books. People are very used to the idea of being able to go on the internet, pick all the things that they want, have them sit there in their list, and then they come to you in the mail with no due dates and no late fees. And BookSwim has taken that the same way a lot of other medium have started to. We're seeing commercials now for things like GameFly, which is Netflix for video games. And
right.
For any of your listeners who may have seen the Sex and the City movie, you probably heard Jennifer Hudson talk about Avelle.com, Bag Bar or Steel, which is the Netflix of handbags. They also do designer sunglasses and jewelry. And so BookSwim is, in the literary world, distributing books through that stream.
Now, I'm sure Netflix is thrilled. Do you have an agreement with them that you can use their name, or has their name become such a generic term that as soon as you say the Netflix of books, people understand what you mean and Netflix doesn't mind?
You know, Netflix officially has no position on it. Unofficially could probably sue all of these companies that have ever used their name in any kind of discussion.
Right.
Then they would be seen as the bad guys, crushing the little guy, and I don't think that's the position that they want to be in. And so they kind of let it slide, and I'm sure that just like Xerox and Kleenex and Band-Aid enjoys being, you know, the name of the product, I'm sure that they probably enjoy that on some level.
Absolutely. Now, many people, when they think of Netflix, they're increasingly thinking of Netflix as a way of getting video on demand. Now, we're well aware of the equivalent for books, which would be this ebook phenomenon. And in fact, I think it was announced recently that Amazon is now selling more ebooks than it is hardback books. I'm wondering if you have any concerns about, just as some people say that Blockbuster, which was recently delisted from one of the major trading markets, that organizations such as bookstores will be in danger, just as Blockbuster and other video rental stores have been, that we're all going to be moving to streaming downloads rather than, for instance, actually purchasing books, either from a bookstore or from you.
I think you hit down on a lot of good points, and I'm going to do my best to address them all. But let's go back to the bit you said about Amazon has just released the statistic that they're now selling more ebooks than hardback books. People hear that and they think tangible books, but the reality is it's just that. It's just hardcover books does not count. Paperback books, which account for well over half of the publishing industry sales. And, you know, when Amazon spends hundreds of millions of dollars to rebrand their book division to be pushing the Kindle, to be pushing ebooks, it's no surprise that with their budget, it's worked, it's been successful, and they are now selling more ebooks than they are their most expensive books. So sure, that would be similar to Mercedes releasing an economy car, completely throwing all of their advertising dollars into advertising this new economy car, ignoring all of their luxury sedans, and then releasing something that says, hey, at Mercedes, our economy car is now outselling our luxury car. Well, that's very nice for you, Mercedes. I'm glad this rebranding has worked for you. It does not change the fact that Lexus, BMW, Audi, Volvo, Jaguar are also doing very well selling luxury vehicles.
Right.
So, you know, that's true what they're saying, but it's also very colored, and you have to be careful to look at exactly how it's colored. Now, how does this bode for brick-and-mortar bookstores? You know, we watched Netflix take apart the brick-and-mortar video stores and video chains one at a time, and I think that you know, when the difference between what Netflix did versus what the Kindle is doing is that Netflix, for a low price, was giving you unlimited monthly access to content, whereas the Kindle, you're paying a la carte, you're paying for every item. And therefore it is a little different there. So whereas with BookSlim, we're following the Netflix model, giving you access to unlimited content during the month, of your subscription. But then you kind of start saying, well, gee, you know, but Netflix, as you pointed out, is doing digital streaming.
Right.
But at the same time, you have to remember that Netflix didn't set out one day to sell computers to every American household and to develop broadband internet across the country. They sat back, they let, you know, companies with a lot of money put a lot of advertising marketing into that infrastructure, and then once we can accept that very few of us are still on dial-up and very few American homes are not online, now they can start including streaming movies, streaming content as part of their service. And BookSlim finds ourselves in a very similar position right now that Netflix was in a few years ago, which is that we have very big companies like Amazon, like Google, like Sony, and Barnes & Noble throwing, you know, north of, my guess, $1 billion in infrastructure and marketing to make all of this happen. And at the same time, BookSlim is sitting back very comfortably. We're a much smaller fish in the pond. And we are letting them do that while we are developing very slowly but surely the technology whereby you can then rent that electronic version the same way Netflix lets you rent the electronic version of a visual medium for a fraction of the price of ownership. And that's where BookSlim is going to very comfortably find itself after all of these companies have re-primed the market and put an e-book put an e-reader into everybody's hands. We're seeing a big shift in the market. It's not necessarily the end of the printed word, but it's a place where, you know, when audiobooks first came out, it was heralded as the end of the written word. From now on, we're only going to listen to things. We're never going to read again.
Right.
And the fact is that that market did grow, and it peaked, it plateaued, and now it occupies its market share of the publishing industry. It has not replaced books. It will never replace books. And I think the same can be said for ebooks. We're seeing it rising, and some people can look at the exponential growth and say, well, based on this exponential growth, we can chart this on our kids' graphing calculators and figure out it's going to go through the roof and explode and never come down. And the fact is it will eventually level off. We're going to see it make an S-curve. You know, it starts out slow, goes up fast, and then kind of levels off, finds its niche. And much like audiobooks Whereas there are people who listen to audiobooks who would never have picked up the book in the first place. So they've expanded the market in that sense, but they've also taken over a portion of the market and will continue to do over their appropriate portion of the market until the time of that plateau, at which point, you know, everything will live in harmony.
Well, that sounds great. Let me remind folks, and I should ask you less complex questions, because you responded to all of it. But
Thank you. I apologize for ranting, but you gave me 5 questions at once, and I didn't want to leave you hanging.
No, that's fine. I'm surprised you could remember it all. Good job. Eric Ginsburg is my guest this afternoon.
Who weren't on radio.
Right. This afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, and he's the marketing vice president of BookSwim, which is, as we've been talking about, the Netflix of books. Now, how exactly does BookSwim work? If one were a member, how does the process work of choosing and receiving and perhaps mailing back books?
Well, if you've ever used Netflix, it's very much like that. You go on to BookSwim.com. You log in, or even if you're not logged in, you can still browse through our catalog. You find the book that you want. You can search by book. You can search by author. You can search by category, by subject, even by ISBN if you know the exact book that you want. It'll come up. You can sort through, browse, grab, whatever, and then just press the Add to Pool button, which will put it into your rental pool, because we're BookSwim, so we have a rental pool instead of a queue. We think it's cute. We hope you laugh with us.
Sure.
It's a pretty simple way of adding books to your list, and then we grab books from near the top of your list. We send them out to you in the mail. We use a combination of UPS and USPS, so it's got the speed of UPS, but it gets delivered with your regular USPS mail. So in case you have a P.O. box or in case you're not home, you have to sign for it. It's still that convenience of USPS with the speed of UPS. So it gets you quickly. You open it up. It's in a bag, an official mail bag. You cut it open. Inside, you're going to find your books, and you're going to find your return bag with a label. So when you're done with some of your books, you'll put some of your books in the return bag, slap the label on, leave it out by your mailbox, or drop it in any blue box like you'd normally mail anything in this life. And from there, it gets back to us. While you still have other books in hand, by the time you're done with those, you've gotten more books, and the cycle just keeps on going.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like a great opportunity for people who are voracious readers. I have some more questions for you, but we need to take a quick musical break and hear a public service announcement. My guest this afternoon is Eric Ginsburg. He's the vice president for marketing of BookSwim. And I just bet, Eric, that your website is bookswim.com.
You are correct.
All right. So if you want to find out more about what we're talking about with Eric Ginsburg, you can do so while we hear a little bit more Wes Montgomery here on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis, Sacramento. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.
Coalition for a Healthy and Active America is fighting a health epidemic: childhood obesity. But there is a cure. Eat right, exercise daily, and educate yourself on the causes and the cure. For more information, visit www.chaausa.org. Remember, get up and get active. Fight childhood obesity.
Eric Ginsburg is here on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. He's part of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour this afternoon, and we're talking about books. Eric Ginsberg, I know that you're a musician and a songwriter. What instruments do you play?
My main instrument is guitar, but I'm also pretty comfortable on piano, bass, Dmitri Valtorn. That's pretty much it.
Are you teaching your son how to play one or more of those instruments as well?
You know, I find that as a parent, no matter how much you know, you can never teach your child lessons the way they would get lessons from an instructor. Because, you know, you're dad, and getting structured time like that is a little tougher. So it actually makes sense to just put him in the school band and pay for his drum lessons and, you know, things like that. Because then he actually gets a little more dedicated to it.
Excellent. And have you been able to sense that he's got your inborn, inherited talent?
You know, I do not have an inborn, inherent musical talent, believe it or not. My musical ability comes from a lot of hard work and just a lot of practicing. However, he does have my inborn, inherent talent when it comes to having a quick wit and always something to say.
Well, that's that'll serve him well as well. Well, Eric Ginsberg of Bookswim, I'm sure that you must feel it an obligation to keep up with the book industry, not only in terms of dollars and cents, but also as a reader. Are there particular books that you've either helped to send out or that you've picked up yourself as a Bookswim member that you've been reading that have really resonated with you?
Well, you know, as a Bookswim member, one book that really resonated with me is Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Sure.
Which is a book all about the food that we eat, what's actually in it, et cetera, et cetera. And I reference that book quite often. I tell people about it. I got a lot of good out of that, although his writing is kind of tiresome, and you can't really read too much of that. Literally getting enervated, but it's still fascinating stuff, and I do refer back to it a lot. Right now, I'm actually reading a graphic novel called V for Vendetta, written by Alan Moore.
Sure.
Which I'm enjoying. I've seen the movie a number of times, and everybody who I've spoken to who'd seen the movie after reading the graphic novel says to me, well, you know, the movie was very good, but it was very different from the graphic novel, and so I'm reading that myself and seeing, you know, trying to keep the movie out of my mind as I read this freshly.
So one can rent graphic novels from Bookswim?
Absolutely.
How about poetry? I don't know if you looked at your poetry list before coming on a poetry and technology program, but would I be able to satisfy some of my poetry needs if I were a Bookswim member?
I would tell you that we do have poetry in our catalog, and that our catalog expands every day based on what our members want. So if you go to Bookswim.com and you search for a book and you don't find it, as a member, there's a little button that says you can add this book to our catalog. So you press it, the actual book you were looking for gets queried through a dozen different databases, and you get presented with a few options. You say, well, this is the one that I wanted, and you hit the request button. And as long as we have just a fraction of 1%, of our members who want a book in our catalog, we add it to the catalog, we add it to your rental pool, we shoot you an email that says, hey, this book is now available, thanks to you, it's in your pool, shift it wherever you want it to be. We look forward to sending it to you soon.
Excellent, that sounds great. Now, I wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity, because through the extended analogy you were offering earlier, you suggested that if downloading a book is like driving an economy car, that holding a book, perhaps even a hardback book in one's hands, is more like the experience of driving or being a passenger in a luxury car. And tell me why, with the fastest growing market for books is for e-books, I heard on NPR a day or two ago. Tell me, with that market growing so significantly, what do you see as the necessary pleasures of the wood pulp hardback book in one's hand while enjoying a story of some sort, for instance?
Again, you always have to look at the coloring of a statement when they say fastest growing. If it grew from 1
to 10, then it had a 1,000% growth, and that's a huge growth. So, you know, you always have to watch out whenever you're dealing with percents, because as they stay in statistics, there are lies, there are damn lies, and then there are statistics. But what do I think the tangible pleasures are of a book? You know, going into a bookstore and touching the books and looking at them, so much work goes into how a book is packaged and how it looks. I mean, they say you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but we do. We do it every day. Whenever we pick up a book and touch it, it feels fresh, it feels new, it has this great-looking art on it. I mean, books are constantly redesigning their covers to catch somebody's eye, to catch on to a new audience. I mean, I saw Fahrenheit 451 today, you know, the latest printing of it, and I, you know, that's maybe the dozenth cover of that book I've seen. They keep repackaging it because it's pretty. But also, you know, as you're reading a book, there's a certain deal of suspense as you feel the pages in your left hand getting thicker and the pages in your right hand getting thinner and you're nearing the end. You know, there's a certain deal of emotional pacing that we get out of that feeling that you just don't get with a status bar on a screen on one of your e-readers.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. What's another book that's in, what do you call them, pools?
Yes, The Rental Pool.
The Rental Pool. What book in your own rental pool are you looking forward to receiving soon?
You know, I just got some new ones, but what am I really looking forward to? Lately, I've been on a graphic novel kick, so right now I'm looking forward to getting Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns.
I loved that one when it came out.
Yeah, so, you know, it's something that I skimmed the first few pages of about a decade ago, and then just always meant to read. And that's one of the great things about having a rental pool is all the things that you've been meaning to get around to, you throw it on the list, and one day it shows up, and you're like, oh, hey, this. And now it's in front of you, so you're going to read it. As opposed to when you're shopping in a bookstore and you feel the pinch of your wallet when you look at something and say, not today.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I hear you. Well, it's a fascinating new way of, I hope, expanding literacy. And the website is bookswim.com. My guest is Eric Ginsberg. He is the marketing vice president of Bookswim. And he's joined us today on the live line of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Eric, this has been a pleasure to talk about this company with you. I wish you success, and I hope especially that you turn a lot more people on to reading.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. You have a good evening.
You too.
You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis, Sacramento. Stick around, for in the second half hour, we'll be joined by Anne Britting Olson, a poet from Maine, here on KDVS. California Primary Care Association reminds the women of our community to have screening mammograms at recommended intervals. Today's low-dose state-of-the-art mammography can detect tumors too small to be discovered by touch. Don't delay, because early diagnosis can mean that you'll have better than a 95% chance of successful treatment. This important message is a courtesy of California Primary Care Association in Sacramento, on the air because they care about the health of the women in our community. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to KDBS. I'm pleased to introduce you all to Anne Britting Olson. Anne Britting Olson is a writer and teacher who lives in the mountains of central Maine with her family. Her work has appeared in literary magazines in 48 states, Great Britain, and Canada, in many of the great places where English is read. Some of those magazines include The Cafe Review, Main Street Rag, The Valparaiso Poetry Review, which has rejected a few of my poems, and Limestone. Her first chapbook, The Church of Saint Materiana, was published by Moon Pie Press in 2007. Her second, The Beauty of It, is forthcoming from Sheltering Pines Press next month. She earned her MFA from the Stone Coast Program of the University of Southern Maine and is a founding member of Simply Not Done, a women's reading, writing, and teaching collective. She's joining us this afternoon on the live line, and I'm very pleased that this time worked out for her schedule. Anne Britting Olson, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks, Dr. Andy. It's really great to be here.
It's wonderful to have you here, and I appreciate you joining us. I mentioned a couple times, both with where you're living and where you got your MFA, the state of Maine, and as it's one of those states that's most remote to those of us living in Northern California and listening to this signal locally, I'm wondering if you could tell us if you were born and raised in Maine, and what is it about Maine that keeps you there?
Well, I certainly was. I'm one of those people who is native, not from away. And what keeps me here is the people. My family, my job, my life, it's pretty calm.
Sure.
It's pretty calm here. Well, not right now. We're having a gigantic thunderstorm, which is really rather exciting on the mountain. But other than that...
That is exciting. I remember reading that you also had the Obama family visiting Maine last week.
They were over in Bar Harbor, which is about 60 miles away from me.
Right.
So I stayed clear of that.
And probably a good idea. A lot of people head up to Maine in the summertime to vacation. I remember I did that one summer and spent most of a summer there, not too far from Belfast, Maine. I'm wondering if you're ever if your area is ever overrun with tourists from the south.
We're one of those towns that people pass through on the way to other places. In fact, most people who pass through this town drive right by my house, and I can wave to them as they continue on.
Do you feel that you have a responsibility as a poet to represent the natural beauty of your home state, or is that something that perhaps just comes naturally and automatically to you without any feeling of responsibility to other readers?
Well, I don't know if it's so much responsibility as a feeling that I am imbued with the place that I live. The things that I write are flavored with my world, my community, my town, my people. it's not exactly a conscious decision. It's more along the lines of, this is what I know. This is what I see every day, and this is what my experience is. And that comes through, I think, in the things that I write.
Wonderful. I remember I was once given a tour of a number of towns in Maine, and I was shown the dark wrought iron gate of the front, kind of protecting the home of Stephen King from onlookers and book lovers such as myself. And I think many of us, when we think of a Maine writer, we might think of Stephen King first. But how would you characterize your own relationship with the poets of Maine, including the work that you did in the Stone Coast program of the University of Southern Maine, where you earned your MFA?
Well, my undergraduate degree was from Bowdoin College, which is in Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
And their biggest literary claim to fame there is that in 1825, Nathaniel Hawthorne graduated from Bowdoin College. That was the same graduating class with future President Franklin Pierce.
Wonderful.
It's a pretty long tradition, but other than Stephen King, you're right. There aren't very many people who achieve that level of fame, notoriety,
right,
things of that nature. But there are a number of people who either were born here or decided to choose Maine as home, that if one is really reading around, one can come across these people fairly easily. One of my favorite dead Maine writers is a woman named Sarah Orne Jewett. Her most famous book was called The Country of the Pointed Firs, and I happen to have a copy of it over there on the bookshelf.
It seems to me that as someone who earned a PhD in American literature, I would expect that every resident of Maine would have a book by Sarah Orne Jewett somewhere on the bookshelf. Maybe that's not universally true, but I've certainly enjoyed her work and got to teach, for instance, The White Heron mm-hmm. in a short fiction class last summer.
Absolutely. You would think so. I think people who, like you and like me, are very interested in American literature, are very familiar with Sarah Orne Jewett, whether we're from Maine or from away. Unfortunately, we also live in a place and a time, I guess, where many people simply don't open the books.
Right.
And therefore, they're not aware of the writers in the canon who have preceded Stephen King, if you will. And that's a sad thing.
Well, it's something that that you and I can do our best to try to address in our separate ways. Let me remind folks that Anne Britting Olson is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. She is a poet and a writer and a teacher from the state of Maine, and she's joining us today in part to share with us some poetry. Her first chapbook is called The Church of Saint Materiana, and her next book comes out from Moon Pie Press. It's called The Beauty of It. I've lost my voice. Could you tell us about that book?
The Beauty of It, my second chapbook, actually won second place in the Sheltering Pines chapbook contest this past year, which was very exciting for me. And the beauty of that second place finish, the first place finish gets publication and a cash prize. I get publication. I don't need the cash prize. I just like to hold the books in my hand.
That's pretty good. How would you characterize that book in terms of some of the topics and themes that you take on?
It's a giant love story, if you will. The pieces that are included in it are about people and places and things that I'm in love with. And I have to say, that's a hell of a lot of things.
I bet.
So I have a number of different poems about things, which just affected me as beautiful and wonderful.
Could you share one with us?
Sure. I could read for you, if you like, the
Great.
Title poem, The Beauty of It. And it goes like this. The Beauty of It. surprising beauty in unlikely places. This afternoon, white smile, dark skin, the hard-hatted man weaving his hands through the elevator wiring in the grime of South Station, plucking the strands as though at the strings of a harp, or at my own heartstrings, for that matter, as he offers to lug my suitcase down two flights of stairs to the subway platform. I love this man. He must know it. As much, perhaps, as I love the waiter 20 years my junior, his black hair tumbling over his black eyes as he pours Beaujolais under the awning on Montmartre, both of us looking forward to the intimate moment when we link fingers and press that secret coinage from palm to palm, skin warm, tip cool. In some place of longing, beneath my walking from work to the bus stop, from the bus stop to home, I know they are out there, jewels littering the path, men to make my blood pound, my skin tingle. Like the sweet fruit inside the prickly outer shell, they demand the work of looking. Just as the poet, after the dissolution of the master class, when we slipped into the whiteness of a light snow, leaned in the car window to kiss my cheek as a snowflake might in its drifting.
Oh, that's very nice. I like that very much. I'm interested, and I was reading some of your poems to a recent graduate of UC Davis here in California, and we were talking about what we liked about them, and part of it is the precision of some of your descriptions, but also the way that you invest them with emotion, but not superfluous or cloying emotion, but I think often just enough to inspire that emotional connection, but also a moment of reflection as well, as we hear the images.
Wow, did you hear that one?
I did. Was that a thunderstrike?
That was, and I think it was very close.
I heard an electrical click on the phone line as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're cut off, we'll know that it's an active God.
It's not personal.
Okay.
But anyway, I want to thank you for saying those really nice things.
Oh, absolutely. Well, because you've published poems in 48 states, there are a good number of your poems available on the web. And
that's true.
And because of your unusual middle name, and let's remind folks that Anne Britting Olson is my guest, B-R-I-T-T-I-N-G-O-L-E-S-O-N. Anne Britting Olson is my guest, and because of your unusual middle name, I was able to find you several times over and see some of the journals where you've published. I really enjoyed your work. You had a poem about Renoir, which I was enjoying, but especially struck by the last couple lines, where you represented both the artistic clutch of kind of the muscle of Rodin's sculpture, as well as the kind of emotional investment of the speaker. And it was just a wonderful poem. I didn't bring it with me, so I don't remember the title offhand, but you probably remember what I'm talking about.
Yes, it's called Sculpture.
Yeah.
How so convenient.
Right. So, and when people Google you, it'll be one of the poems that they find. But and I think people listening at home would also be very curious about that statistic. You having been published in literary magazines in 48 states, you are somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 states ahead of me. And I'm wondering if that was a bucket list to get a poem published in every state, and how it is that you're so productive, not only as a writer, but as someone who must keep a great number of spreadsheets to keep track of where all your poems are.
Well, actually, I don't do spreadsheets. I have a notebook, and I've been writing them by hand for, the past century, I think.
Okay.
Where they go, when they get taken, and then the page where they've been written, has some of them go on for several pages where they've been rejected. So please, Dr. Andy, don't feel bad.
Oh, I don't feel bad.
And then once they've been taken, I just transfer the sheet into a different notebook for the ones that have, in fact, been taken. The states that I haven't been published in are Hawaii and Alabama.
All right. And I bet you're working on those.
I am, when I think about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it would just be a lovely statistic to have. I've nailed them all. And then they can allow Puerto Rico to become a state and perhaps Washington, D.C., and then I can get those guys, too.
I would like that. as someone who's born in Washington, D.C., I've been upset for a number of decades that I've been paying taxes and that now my mother does without representation in Congress. So for poetic and political reasons, I think it's about time that we give you another state where you can publish your work. And there are a great number of very good journals there. Now, how about we've been talking about the Maine literary scene, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that like many poets, you've looked locally before looking to other states. How would you characterize the sort of literary journals that are either nearby to you or in Portland and in other cities in Maine?
Well, one of the ones that I listed in the bio that I sent you, the Cafe Review,
yeah.
is actually published in Portland, and it has nationwide distribution. It's a lovely, lovely piece of work. There's another one that I'm very fond of that's headquartered over near Farmington called the Aurorian. That particular journal started its life out on Cape Cod and then seemed to gravitate towards me, which made me very happy. That's very lovely, too. I've actually served for a while on the board of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, which is a clearinghouse of information for people who wish to write and wish to publish in the state of Maine, and it's now in its 35th year of existence. I didn't serve on the board for all 35 years, but I actually first became a member when I was 15 years old, and I thought, this is a group of people who are doing what I want to do.
Right.
And are interested in the things that I'm interested in, and I have a great, great loyalty to the organization.
Wonderful. And how about for your own self? You've spread your poems very widely, but I don't know that you've grabbed AnnBrittingOlson.com. I'm wondering if you feel that eventually that'll be a responsibility as a poet to represent who you are and what you've done so that people have a centralized place to find you when they Google you that shows up at the top of the heap.
Well, I do own the domain.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I am a technological moron, if you will. I have built a website and rebuilt a website, and can I load it up on the FTP server? Not me. So I have to find somebody who will take care of this sort of thing for me.
Right.
It's sad to have to admit.
Well, I would know who to put you in touch with locally, but it is good to have someone nearby who can speak to you in English while standing over your shoulder and point things out to you.
That would be a good thing.
Someone who doesn't take the mouse from your hands all the time.
Hard to do on a laptop, but there it is.
Absolutely. Well, Anne, let's hear another poem. Will this next one also be from your upcoming book, The Beauty of It?
Well, actually, I would like to read one from the other book, The Church of St. Materiana, if I could.
Sure.
One that's called History Lesson. The book itself, St. Materiana, the church, is in Tintagel in North Cornwall. It's the legendary birthplace of King Arthur. And I wrote many of these after a solo trip I took across the southwest of England, driving, hitchhiking, riding on buses, and riding on trains. And this particular piece came from a ride on a train called History Lesson. Fortunately, drinking is not prohibited. The woman in the train, turbaned, eyes made enormous by lavish coal, draws a bottle of Newcastle Brown from her bag and offers it around. She lives in the past, in a time even before Brit Rail outlawed smoking, her crumpled cigarette pack thrust into her pocket. Still, now, she grieves for Catherine Howard as the green expanse of Wiltshire rolls its way forward, Howard, only 19, practiced placing her head on the block so as not to quake when the day came to repeat her cousin Anne Boleyn's fate. A terrible man, this woman rails, about the husband Catherine and Anne shared with four others. So cruel, so jealous, so abusive, and there is pity in her voice. The compassion she might have for a neighbor who never takes off her sunglasses and wears long sleeves in summer to hide the bruises on her arms.
That's nice. An unexpected ending there. I'm wondering how it is you look at endings of a poem, what you feel, how you know when a poem is concluded, how you know when the ending really works.
Well, one of the wonderful poets I had the great opportunity to work with at the Stone Coast program is a poet named Baron Wormser, who is a former poet laureate of the state of Maine. And he said, there are a couple of things you can do with your ending. You can end with a statement. You can tell people what they're supposed to know. Or you could end with an image and let them envision what they're supposed to know.
Right.
And I always found the second, and I think he meant for me to find the second, to be a much more interesting opportunity, if you will.
Makes sense. Who are some other poets writing today who have been your favorites to work with or your favorites to read? Maybe someone who's books you'll always buy when they come out with a new book.
I am very fond of a writer by the name of Theodore Deppe, Ted Deppe.
Uh-huh.
He is associated with the Stone Coast program, but he actually runs the Stone Coast in Ireland program and lives in Ireland with his wife Annie, who is also a poet. Ted's most recent book came out last summer from Tupelo Press, and it's called The Red Line, and it has one poem in it that is the title poem. It was originally called Orpheus on the Red Line, and I heard him read that poem twice in two different venues, and both times I ended up bawling by the end of it. It was so moving.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Ted is one of those wonderful people who can actually use the word love in a poem without coming off sounding cheap, which is a very hard thing to do.
Right. I bet. And tell me again how one spells his name.
It's Deppe.
All right. Great. Well, I've really enjoyed our opportunity to chat about poetry and to hear a couple of your poems. Tell us again when The Beauty of It comes out from Sheltering Pines Press.
It comes out in August, next month, and I can't wait.
I can't wait
to hold it in my hand.
And will that be something that'll be available on the website for Sheltering Pines Press? And
yes, absolutely.
And is that shelteringpinespress.com.org?
.org.
All right, great. Well, Anne Britting Olson, I've really enjoyed hearing your work and conversing about poetry. It sounds like that storm that was right on top of you about 15 minutes ago is now moving away.
I hope so. My dog is going frantic.
Well, we here in dry Northern California will think about that with a certain amount of envy. This is the dry season, and we have to wait a number of months yet before we can expect any rain. Well, thanks so much, Anne, for appearing on the show. And I think you're the first poet representing Maine on this program in its 10-year history. So now I have to go and find poets from the other 49 states.
And, there you go.
And see if
and
I can catch up with you.
And then you can add them to your bucket list.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me. It's been a joy.
Same here. Take care.
You too.
You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis.
The Reverend Timothy Malone welcomes you to the Multicultural Christian Church of Davis, located in the Alhambra Apartment Community Room at 4500 Alhambra Drive, near Mace Boulevard in Alhambra in Davis. Join with many cultures, one faith, every Sunday at 10 a.m. For more information, call 753-6148.
Interrupt this great Wes Montgomery music for just a moment to tell you that the Metabolic Disorders National Affiliation, or MDNA, wants California residents to know that state newborn screenings only screen for 4 out of the 38 or more metabolic disorders that can cause severe impairments, brain damage, seizures, weak immune systems, and heart and liver disease. The MDNA is a nonprofit organization that assists families experiencing financial difficulties with financial aid to purchase necessities for their children, including formula, therapeutic equipment, heart monitors, IV pumps, and other supplies. They assist with no discrimination towards race, religion, or marital status. For more information, visit their website at www.metdna.org or email Carrie Callisto at kcallisto@earthlink.com. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We are at the end of the hour, so I'd like to take a moment to thank my two guests. First off being Eric Ginsberg. Eric is the marketing VP for BookSwim. He's a very enthusiastic guy about BookSwim, the Netflix for books. And I'm sure he communicated that well. It's probably why they gave him that job. I'm going to go check out BookSwim when I get home today. Though as an aside, I should say that I try to do my best to support local independent bookstores such as Sweetbriar Books and The Avid Reader here in the city of Davis. The Avid Reader has hosted a number of poetry and fiction events that I've attended in the last couple weeks, which I very much appreciate, an experience that you won't be able to have mailed to your mailbox. But, you know, that's me. And then also Anne Britting Olson, the writer and teacher from the state of Maine, who is so widely published. Her book, The Beauty of It, is coming out next month from Sheltering Pines Press. My name is Dr. Andy. This has been Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much to you for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station. And make sure to stick around, because there's some great music right around the corner. Until next week, take care and keep it right here on KDVS 90.3 FM.